Namaste.
Namaste. Almost in time.
That was really good.
On that note, off we fuck.
You've been listening to The Dating Show. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Culture Clash on FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Culture Clash with me, Juggy.
And me, Tamvi.
I think we've got that nailed now.
I think we need a little jingle at the beginning.
Oh, that'd be nice, isn't it? Listen, music producers, hit us up. Create a little jingle for us. So I'm Juggy. I'm a former BBC presenter. I produce and I make films as well.
And I'm Tamvi. I used to work in banking and finance, which is going to be so relevant for today's topic. But now I am a full-time content creator on social media and a presenter as well.
So you get a little bit of both.
A little bit of sweet, a little bit of sour.
Yeah. And obviously, I'm in the basis of Culture Clash. So our show is takes a lot look at the melting pot of British society and the culture clashes that can arise. So we aim to have fun and honest chats about being young and British, but also holding on to our cultural values and beliefs. So I'm of Sikh faith and Punjabi culture, but born here in Britain.
And I'm Indian, but I am of the Jain religion, but also born and raised in London.
So the whole aim of this show is to have diverse conversations, add that kind of South Asian perspective from our points of view, but then also we've got some like great guests lined up for the whole series, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got some amazing guests today. So for our versus section, we have Meha. She is MSB Vision Online and she's like an incredible career coach. So I can't wait to speak to her.
Yeah, and we're going to be speaking to Kojo later in the show. He's a famous comedian, and I just can't wait to get that insight from him.
Yeah, he's going to be fun to talk to, definitely.
And hopefully, you know, he'll give us a few little jokes. Yeah, a few little jokey tips, eh? And maybe tickets too. He's doing a tour at the moment, so.
Free tickets.
We always want our freebies, we do. So for our first segment, we talk about the latest news stories, okay? So each week, we'll be picking several stories that have been making the news or the pop culture scene and taking a look at them from our South Asian perspective. So today, obviously, the show's about careers. We're talking about the great big reshuffle and the big stay. So what that kind of the story is out there at the moment, it's trending on LinkedIn and Twitter and everything. It's about people wanting to stay in their jobs and get that stability and that kind of financial income, because after COVID, everything kind of reshifted. Mm. And, you know, there's less options now. We're in a recession and it's going on. And I can speak about that because I'm freelance at the moment. So I've been freelance for the last 6 months. And in the industry, obviously, Tamvi, you've been in the media industry now, it can be a bit daunting. You know, you have them weeks where you're really busy and you're, you know, really, you know what's coming in terms of money wise that week. But then you can have weeks where nothing's coming in and it can just be, and, you know, you've got bills to pay and you've got stuff to do. And then obviously the whole age thing as well, you're kind of creeping up to the age. And I know everyone says age doesn't matter, but it does, you know,
it does.
And you're like, you know, you want to get on the property ladder and you want to do things and, you know, I want to move out of home.
Yeah.
Just little stuff like that. So obviously I am thinking about now returning to some sort of kind of, you know, full-time job with just, you know, a bit of security. I know what's coming in every month. I know my routine. I'm a very routine person. Mm. So when that's taken away from me, and do you feel like that's a kind of common trend now?
It's so interesting because I feel like on social media, everyone has glamorized kind of like quit your corporate job, don't be tied to a 9-to-5. And like, I'm one of those people, so don't get me wrong, I'm guilty of it. In like when lockdown happened, I quit my corporate job to become a content creator. And the scariest thing, hands down, from that move is the lack of financial stability. So I can totally understand why people now who, you know, are self-employed or like in the media world or whatever industry you're in are looking to gain something a bit more stable, financially stable. It's more certain in terms of job stability. So these are important conversations, and I feel like people often don't talk about it, or like not, they're a bit embarrassed to admit that, like, actually I want to go get a job again. There's nothing wrong with having a job and being employed. Like, it can be incredible. So yeah, I can understand why that shift is happening now.
And don't you think a lot of people actually in the media industry, a lot of people that you see content creating and influencing, they actually do have full-time jobs. It's just they don't promote it. I know one of my friends, they're a DJ and they still have a full-time job, but on the weekends they DJ and it looks like they just don't promote their other stuff.
Yeah, it's so easy to like glamorize, like, oh my god, I'm living my best life, like I don't go to an office, I don't work at a desk. But really it's like they do, and that's how they pay the bills. And it's important to have financial stability in any
world. You're
going to
see them on the Monday morning commute.
Yeah, it's like, hold on a minute, I thought you know, woke up at 10 every day and like went to the gym. So no, I think it is a really important conversation to have. And I guess it's like we should de-influence the idea of like it's amazing to be self-employed. Like, whilst it is, and if you're good at it and you've built yourself a stable way of doing it, there's so many challenges that come with it. It's scary. And yeah, I'm actually in the process of like looking to buy a property. Mm-hmm. And oh my God, if I was in employment, my life would be 100 times easier.
Just getting on the mortgage ladder. Let's just talk about that for a second, because, you know, loads of people are doing the help to buy schemes and kind of doing, you know, asking for like, you know, help from parents and as guarantors. And because it is hard, even, you know, doing it on one income, mm-hmm. let alone say there's a, you know, loads of people are single now and they just want to get their house on their own, and that's fair enough, but it's so hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, even if you are on a decent salary, employed, you are quite financially sensible, it's still hard to afford to buy a property, especially in London.
Yeah.
So I think even if you're employed, it's hard, let alone if you're self-employed, right? So yeah, I think so much to talk about in today's topic, especially in terms of career and so many challenges you face as self-employed, but also as employed.
Yeah, and also just talking about careers in general, obviously we're expected as a career, as South Asians, you know, to go down the doctor route, the lawyer route, the traditional safe route. Now obviously we're sitting here in the recording studio, we're not down the safe route, we're not, you know, how did that, obviously you started in a finance career, how did that kind of whole decision come about?
Yeah, I think my career decision up till last year wholeheartedly was based around my culture and like traditional expectations as an Indian woman. So like, I was always super academic because that is such an important part, I think, of South Asian culture. It's like focusing on your studies and everything else comes second. And then, you know, I did a great degree, I became an accountant, which is such a like typical South Asian career.
Yeah, but it's good, it's a good respectable career.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad I did it because I have that stability and I've always got that safety net to fall back on. And I do think culture plays a huge part in career choices, but at the same time you have to do something you enjoy and you're passionate about, and if an opportunity comes around that isn't so traditional in terms of career, you should absolutely do it if you're able to do it. If you're in a position where, you know, you might not have financial commitments, you're young, you can afford to take a risk. Yeah. I feel like for me, going against my culture in that sense, in terms of careers, was like the best thing I ever did.
So for me, I wish I kind of went down your route and got that stable career, whether it be like lawyer or accountant or doctor or whatever it was that I could do, because I kind of followed my passions, and it's been, you know, I've had loads of peaks, but loads of kind of trumps as well. And it's kind of like, it's navigating that. But let's talk about it from a 20. You're in your 20s, yeah. I'm in my 30s. 20s, you can really experiment, right? You can kind of, you know, do what you want to do. And I feel like that's where we've seen a lot of people job hopping, because they're just trying to figure it out.
Yeah, I think, well, I also do have this view that you can job hop at any age and it's never too late to start something new.
100%.
But I do think it's much easier when you're younger, when, say, you don't have the pressures of like a family or children to look after, and you can afford to try a few different things and figure out what you like. And also, job hopping is the biggest way to earn more money. Like, that's a fact. Even if you stay within the same industry, if you're job hopping between different finance roles or specializing in things like, I don't know, asset management, private equity, here's my finance girl coming out, but you can literally jump like 10K. 20k salaries.
I need to get into this, Tanvi.
Genuinely,
get me in.
So I think as well, like, even if you're in an incredibly comfortable, safe role at a great firm, you should always keep your options open and look for the next promotion, look for the next jump, because that is the quickest way to increase your earnings.
Also, like, Stephen Bartlett always says this, and I follow his podcast, and he always goes, quitting's not a weakness, it's not a bad thing, because I'm not advocating it either, you know, you've got to make the right decision for you. But he's saying, you know, he's quit certain jobs and he's quit certain things, and obviously he sold his shares in his company and just little stuff like that, because he wants to move on. And I know a lot of people that are doing that now, like my old boss, for example. He's come to me and he goes, look, you know, I want to find a new passion now, I've done this 8 years and I want to find something totally new. And that's fine, it's okay to change, it's okay to quit, and it's okay to find your passion, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's so important. Like, your job is something you do most of your day, right? You spend so many hours on it, so it's got to be something that keeps you interested and it's constantly changing, and I feel like that's absolutely fine.
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's just finding that balance, isn't it? Finding that balance. But also, a lot of people are living at home now, mm-hmm. while they try and figure it out. So is that, like, I'm an advocate for that. I think that's a good thing while you're kind of not in a stable one and you're figuring stuff out, and, you know, you've got that, and you can, if you can.
If you can, yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm in that position. I live at home and I love it. Like, I live with my parents and thankfully I get along with them and they're not that toxic. But I think, like, it's really...
that toxic.
Yeah, I mean, grandparents. But I think it is really common within South Asian culture to, like, to live with your parents. So I think it shouldn't be something that is a taboo or stigmatised in a negative way. You just have to make decisions that work for you financially, mentally, emotionally, all of those things. So yeah,
well, we're a good example of this, we're going through it at the moment.
Definitely.
So,
like, don't be embarrassed if you live at home, and just save money and invest it and
own it.
Yeah, own it.
Own everything you do.
But yeah, and I feel like this is the perfect time to move on to our next segment, and we are going to be doing verses. It's one of my favourite parts of the show, but we essentially pick a question every week that relates to our main topic, which is careers in this episode. So we will offer our opinions on the topic, and then we'll speak to an expert about their view on the question. And this week, because we're looking at careers, our question is, which is better, working for yourself or working for others? And I know we've touched upon it already, but I can't wait to get into this, dig a little deeper. And we have an incredible guest on today's show. She is Meha Sidhu Batra, and she is known as MSB Vision Online. I see her content all the time. She's a career coach, and she is amazing. So can't wait to chat to you about all things career. Thanks for coming on the show.
No, thank you so much for having me. Hi.
Hi. Do you want to just tell us like a little bit about yourself and what you do now?
Okay, sure. So I am originally from New Delhi, India. I lived there all my life. I went down the traditional path of making my very Asian parents proud of me.
Okay. Very appropriate for this show then.
Yeah, which is to get an accounting degree. And after I became a chartered accountant, I decided to step outside my comfort zone and somehow convince them that I wanted to move abroad to do an MBA. And then I moved to London to do my MBA from Imperial College in 2016. And then I've been in London ever since. I have worked in consulting across a varied numbers of organizations. And about a couple of years ago, I decided to launch my online platform, which was called MSB Vision. It was just supposed to be a side hustle to help young professionals on their career paths. And it just blew up. And the love that we got from the community was crazy. And that made me leave my full-time job about 1.5 years ago and pursue this full-time. So,
That is honestly lovely to hear. And congratulations on all your success. I did want to ask on that, how do you find kind of navigating London and the London kind of career scene and building your business here compared to back home where you're from?
I think every country is different and ways of working are different. I think for me it was because I was in a corporate job before I started my own venture, I could sort of understand how things run here and work here. I think some of the biggest differences are that, of course, everything here is done right on time, bang on time. In India, things can be a little bit slower. And of course, the level of professionalism here, you know, the communication, the way people communicate is so proper and formal. I also feel very inspired with the whole startup scene here. The entrepreneurs really support each other. And there's so much diversity and so much to learn from people from, you know, different aspects of life, different cultural backgrounds. It's literally like a melting pot of so many cultures coming together. So yeah, definitely London has grown me as a professional, as an individual, and hopefully I'm taking that back to my audience as well.
Yeah, no, I can definitely vouch for that because I'm part of your audience and like I've seen your content over the years and it genuinely is so helpful, not only for kind of young professionals, but anyone looking, you know, to develop in their career. I think it is so great. So everyone needs to go check her out. And speaking of careers, like our versus question this week is, which is better, working for yourself or working for others? So love to hear your take on that because obviously you've experienced both.
Sure. Honestly, Tanvi, I don't think there's a right and wrong there because I feel like we sort of idealize the entrepreneurial life these days, like Gen Z is just being told to quit their jobs and do their own thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people don't want that. A lot of people don't want the entrepreneurial hustle and struggle. And it's not easy thinking about where your next paycheck is going to come from, you know, like that's also a stress that one has to deal with as an entrepreneur. I do believe that we are now moving towards a more like flexible kind of way of working where, you know, you can balance different aspects of your life and your life is not just about your career. You know, all these things come together. So I feel that it all comes down to what matters to you. And if you are in a job that is paying you well and you're happy working just 9 to 5, 9 to 6 and not working on weekends and not working on your time off, then yes, a steady job is definitely for you. But yes, if you're somebody who's more creative, who somebody wants to be their own boss, and is just, you know, wanting to make it big in the idea that they are passionate about, then yes, entrepreneurship is for you. I don't think there's one better than the other, for sure.
No, and I think you're right. Like, there's so many pros and cons to both. And also, yeah, even if you're in a job, I was in a job that it was meant to be a 9-to-5, but then I ended up working evenings and weekends, and it was kind of those sort of things that did make me question, actually, could I just be doing this for
it
myself?
It is never 9-to-5, though, is it?
No, it's never 9-to-5. It's obviously so, like, situational. So it just depends on where you are, who you're working for, and what you want as well. And you did mention kind of this whole rise in the next generation of wanting to be their own boss, right? Like, we see it all the time on social media. So what do you think has, like, caused this rise or demand for people wanting to quit their jobs and do something that is more entrepreneurial?
I think it's just probably one of them is technology, and like, there's so much awareness of what people are up to, how much people are making, how much they're able to, you know, go on holidays and relax, even as like influencers, and you know, that's the life that you see online all the time. And secondly, I also feel like, you know, I think we're in a generation that is more digital, so there's like a digital revolution, evolution going on. The generations before us, so our parents and our grandparents, they were the ones who had to really struggle to get the basic needs met, yeah, right? So for us, all of that came on a platter in a way. So we don't have to hustle for food and safety and security. Like, all of that is sorted. And now for us, we're not thinking of the basic needs. We're thinking about, okay, how do I have a comfortable life? How do I feel happy with what I have? So I think people are now chasing more happiness, work-life balance, joining organizations which serve a bigger purpose, you know, whether that's sustainability, climate change. People are so big advocates about diversity and inclusion now. So all of these things, I think these are newer themes that probably our parents, our grandparents didn't even think of, you know, coming across. They just wanted one job for 30, 40 years and they were just happy, you know, going to the factory every day and just being happy doing what they were doing. Just, so I feel like our generation is definitely, and the generation that's coming in now is also really passionate and isn't going to settle now, yeah. I feel.
But just on that though, do you not feel like, as South Asians, I feel like I come from a family of entrepreneurs. Like, my mum and dad, when they came here, they had to make their own business because there wasn't limited jobs available for them. You know, they weren't educated or, you know, they couldn't speak English at the time. So they created their own business and they were in the business for like 25 years. And every single member of my family now, I've got their own businesses because, so do you think that's kind of inspired in our culture anyway? The kind of be your own boss, because when you see that and you see the kind of rewards of that, and obviously there's a lot of sacrifices, they're working 7 days a week,
yeah,
you know, they don't have that, you know, luxury of, you know, they get one, my dad used to get one holiday on Christmas Day, he didn't get to open. But do you think that that's kind of embedded in us as well as South Asians, and you know, if you see that, you know,
I mean, I think it's a bit different for me. I think we probably have a more similar story, but like, as a first generation or second generation immigrant, you're right, like, we have more of a privilege, like, we have more of a choice. So for our parents, it was literally like, how can we just make something that is financially stable and secure? Your parents took a risk and started their own business. My parents took the risk and came from, you know, East Africa to the UK. So that was like their big risk. But the minute they get here, it's like, okay, how can we grab onto anything that is financially stable? Whereas now that we are here, we have kind of more of a privilege to choose what actually makes us happy and what risks can we take in terms of our career. I feel like maybe they didn't have that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you, Jaggi. I think you saw that growing up, that they were anyway putting themselves out there and working all the time. So you already got that entrepreneurial spirit from them. But you know, yeah, I think Tanvi's right. We have a privilege, like, being here on this platform, in this country, that so many people are, you know, dying to live here.
But it is like, I do think it's a cultural thing though, because like the birth of the corner shops, it is predominantly like, in the nicest, but it is, you know, the corner shop that's run by Hindus, Sikhs, Muslims, you know, of different cultures. South Asians are kind of known, you know, they're synonymous with a corner shop, right? So it is that rise of, you know, we were entrepreneurs, we did, you know, Mr. Singh's corner shop, you see that, yes, all the time. Yes. And so I think that has inspired this next generation.
Yeah, definitely. But also, Jaggi, if you look at the corporate world right now, like, you look at finance jobs, lawyers, all of them are predominantly Indians, Asians, you know, coming into London. These are the high paying jobs that Indians want to get. And that's why they move to London. So you see consulting, finance and law, you'll see Indians in big numbers in all these big companies as well. So I think we just want to be everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think also like something that's so core to our culture is work ethic, right? Like we have always been taught from a young age to work really hard, to be, you know, focused on our studies. So again, that plays into those sorts of roles. And I think it's great on the other side that firms are placing more of an emphasis on diversity and inclusion and making these jobs available for all different types of cultures. So I think that's really nice that you've kind of highlighted that actually there are so many Indians, for example, in those roles.
Definitely.
I mean, something you've already spoken about is you were in the corporate environment and then you quit to become self-employed. So what are like kind of tips you have for anyone who might be looking to do the same and make that switch?
Sure, I think that you did something similar, right? So I'm sure you'll have stuff to add. I think for me, it wasn't like an overnight decision because you know, it is an London is an expensive city to live in.
It is.
Agreed.
And yeah, you know, I did have that risk averse attitude because that's how I've been raised. And you know, just to weigh the pros and cons. So I started. I think my biggest tip would be for anybody wanting to make that shift is just be very aware of what you know, what your financial situation is, if you have any other responsibilities. And I started saving up like 6 months before I actually resigned. So I started saving, I had an emergency fund. I also knew and I was aware of the compromises that I will have to make in the short run because, you know, there wasn't going to be any steady paycheck. There were probably opportunities that I would have to say yes to that I didn't want to because I needed the money coming in. So I think you just have to be self-aware and be okay that there's going to be some short-term pain for long-term gain. So I think that's the biggest advice that I would give to anybody. Content creation and having your own business all seems really glamorous, but there is a lot of work that needs to be done and you have to be okay going down that path before you actually decide to make that big leap.
Yeah, that is so important. Like, it has to be calculated. Like, it's a risk, but it has to be calculated because, you know, we see it overnight. Oh, yeah, I quit my job. I'm this, I'm that. A viral success. But in reality, like, if you haven't got a paycheck coming in for that month, like, or don't have an emergency fund, like you said, like, where's that money coming from? And I think it's important to have those conversations about the reality of quitting your job.
I think it can be dangerous to look at social media, like you Peter pointed out earlier, just looking at social media, seeing all these influencers abroad and this and that, you don't actually know sometimes where it's come from or how they're doing it. And
seen
it's
that Dubai scandal.
Tell us about that.
I'm not going to go into too much detail, but there was this whole thing about how influencers went to Dubai and it looked like they were living this glam life, but in reality, they were getting money from all sorts of places in Dubai doing all sorts of things. So again, you're right, like, it's so easy to assume like life's really easy and glamorous, but you never know what people are doing behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's just you've got to look at your own reality, don't you?
So. Yeah. Well, let's talk about kind of your role now as a career coach. So you're fully kind of self-employed as a business owner. Tell us about like your current role and what you do, what day to day is like.
Sure. So a lot of it is still content creation. I feel the best way to help people is, of course, through digital media. You know, the reach of social media is just crazy. Like, I have somebody from the smallest villages in India, Pakistan, following what I'm doing. And then at the same time, there's somebody from LA and New York watching the same stuff. So I feel that really takes up a lot of my time, which is creating good quality content. It's about staying consistent, but also delivering some value. And then I do a lot of workshops, masterclasses. I have a lot of one-on-one mentoring with students, group coaching as well. We're also launching a podcast soon. And there's a couple of other ideas, products in the pipeline. So I feel like there's no crash course on being a digital entrepreneur, right? So I'm still navigating. I'm still figuring things out. But I wake up every morning with a lot of happiness. You know, like Monday mornings aren't dreadful for
me. That's good. That's nice, isn't it? That's really nice.
No Sunday blues every night.
Yes, exactly. None of that anymore. And I think I also, as an entrepreneur, you know, wanted some level of flexibility doing something I really love. So I like that I can work on a Saturday night if I want to, and you know, take it easy on a Tuesday morning if the need be.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, the flexibility, right, and the freedom that comes with being an entrepreneur is great, but it also means it's hard to switch off as well. So, like, what are some of the challenges that you've kind of had with being...
I think that was my biggest challenge, Tanvi. I once I quit my job, I went all in and I was like, okay, I have to make it big. You know, I'm going to get a million followers in the next 6 months and all of that. And that led to like crazy amount of burnout. My mental health suffered, my physical health suffered. I reached a stage where I was like, why the hell did I quit my job? You know, I should have just stuck to the nine to six. And why am I doing this to myself? So I think after that, I started to draw some serious boundaries for myself. So like on Sundays, I don't do any work. Like that's one day that I try not to pick up anything. I think that's one of the struggles I feel most entrepreneurs face. That was one of my biggest struggles. Second was, I think it can get a little lonely because, you know, when you're working in a 9-to-5, you're going into the office, you're meeting people, you have colleagues. And then none of my friends are entrepreneurs even outside of work. So for me to establish sort of like a network of people who I can talk to, you know, who can bounce off ideas from, was difficult in the beginning, but now I feel a lot of more people are doing similar things, so it's great.
Great. I feel like once you've built a community and have a network of people that get it and can relate to it, it makes such a difference. And we're some of those, so you absolutely know where to find us if you ever need any
advice. Exactly, like co-working. But no, thank you so much for joining us. But if anyone wants career coaching, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Instagram, MSB Vision, or my YouTube channel, Mihir Sindhu Batra. So yeah.
Amazing. And definitely go check her out because she is giving valuable advice.
And you've got so much coming up, which is exciting. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
That has definitely given me some tips.
It's inspiring, I think, when you speak to people, you know, who have done it themselves.
Yeah.
So we're here for the Culture Clash segment of the show. It's where we talk to guests from different backgrounds, different ethnicities, to see about the topic of the week, which is careers, to see how different and similar how different and similar it is. So the guest, I'm very excited to say, is comedian and Britain's Got Talent finalist, Kojo Anim. Kojo, how you doing?
How you doing, mate? You all right? You good?
Yeah, all good. So you are joining us from LA, right?
Yeah, I'm currently in LA. Been out here since January, working on a TV sitcom, doing some writing, acting, and just trying to take things on another level, really.
That's nice. So is that like your permanent base now, or are you back and forth? Because I know you were in the UK. We tried to catch you while you were in the UK as well, but it seemed like a whistle-stop tour, wasn't it?
Yeah. So I'm based here at the moment. And because I spent like most of last year here. So I just felt like it makes sense to just kind of base myself here because this is where I'm actually cooking and things are really looking promising. So, I've decided to kind of base myself here for the foreseeable future. I come home for family, staff and friends as well and work as well. So, yeah, I'm just currently like based here at the moment. It is.
But like, we're going to get into all of this, but just for the sake of the show, obviously Culture Clash, I'm from a Sikh Punjabi background. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how that kind of all fits in and just a little bit about yourself before we kind of get started?
Yeah, my parents are Ghanaian. I was born in London. I was actually in foster care from 5 to about 16, I think, and raised by Caribbean parents. So I've kind of got a little mix and blend of the different cultures, you know.
That's a nice different cultures to have, though, isn't it? I bet the food's different, the kind of music's different.
Exactly. The food as well. So I'm kind of not your traditional African, which I get slated for sometimes. But I have a healthy mix and blend of the Caribbean side as well as the African side. So that's kind of been my background. I lost my mum last year, August actually. So we just recently had a 1 year anniversary. So that was kind of tough. But we get to go back to Ghana as well. We have a house there, the family home, and it's not too bad.
And Kojo, one of the reasons I ask is because being like South Asian, one of the stuff is we get kind of you know, my parents have always said, go down the traditional career paths. And that's doctor, lawyer, you know, accountancy, anything that's steady, that's kind of seen as good income. And the kind of arts and media and everything we're doing now is kind of frowned upon almost. Like, is that the same for like your background and your culture? Has that been, because obviously you're a comedian now, was there any, was there any kind of hesitation when you decided you wanted to become that from your family or friends?
Well, yeah, I think you have to remember that our parents, you know, I'm sure our parents are similar in that their reasons for why they moved to the UK, right, was for stability, was for finances, was for an honest job, you know, and making ends meet ultimately. They kind of made the decision to kind of move to the Western world to kind of thrive, you know, and to give a better future for their children. And then here we go talking about, I want to be a TikToker, you know? So it's that.
They don't understand, do they? They don't understand what that is even.
Of course. You know what I sacrificed? You know what I gave up?
Yeah.
But I think what they didn't realize is what better looked like, you know? And I think better isn't always what you've had to do. And I think when you think about parenting, improvement and progress isn't about all your children having to do what you've done. It's about them having a leg up, an easier path that still gives them life lessons, you know? And I think ultimately we are the seeds of their sacrifice, of their hard work. It just doesn't look like what they had to go through, because no one's exempt from struggle. No one's exempt from being broke. No one's exempt from paying bills. Like, we've all got to figure that out within what we've chosen to do. I'm sure them leaving where they grew up was probably frowned upon by their parents, you know?
Yeah.
Why would you leave over there, you know, because it's something that our grandparents probably couldn't fathom. So I think every generation tends to have their own struggle, but their own risks as well. And I think with what we do in the creative sector, you know, it's a risk. We don't know when the next check is. We don't know when the next job is. But that's something that we've kind of chosen, knowing that if all else fails, we can always get a job that pays consistently. Do you know what I mean? So I think this new generation, or from my generation, I guess, up, being creative is a new way of stability. Do you know what I mean? If you've got the hard work in you and the charisma and character.
And also, though, being creative, I think a lot of people, if you make it and you do kind of reach that big time, it is really fruitful, like in all areas. Do you know what I mean? It can surpass a lot of stuff. It's just like you mentioned earlier, very uncertain. The climb up there is very, it's very uncertain, isn't it? It's kind of, yeah.
Story, right? I've got a story. So I remember my mom, the first time she came to see me perform. And until she saw me perform, she was very much against, you know, me being a stand-up comedian. It's like, what is this? What are you talking about? You're a clown. This is not serious. I can't tell my family what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? All that other stuff. And then when she saw me perform, I remember it was at Stratford Rex in East London.
Yeah.
She was in England and she came over. She saw me perform. I think it was like a Ghana Independence Day, so they'd hired me to perform. And I was probably like 2 years in maybe, of my career, and I remember she was sitting on the top of the balcony, and when everybody was laughing and roaring at me and all the other stuff, that is the moment when I think she said, okay,
you got it, good.
I was like, my mom's up there, she's watching me for the first time, and then she was up there like the queen, as if she's always supported from the beginning. Do you know what I mean? Just taking
you gave her the spotlight. That's good tactic.
Yeah, exactly, that's probably what she liked the most. But ever since I think with our parents, once they see the potential in what we're choosing to do, they're right behind us.
Yeah, they have to see it in the flesh. Like, I had the premiere of my film, and my dad has literally just not understood what I've done. And then he saw it, he saw my name up there, and he was like, "Oh, son, I get it now. I get it." And I was like, thank you, finally.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's take it back to the start for you. Like, was there any temptation or anything to go down the more traditional career paths? Or was it always you wanted to be a comedian, you wanted to be in the creative sector? Like, when did it click for you?
Do you know what? I had no aspirations to be in the creative sector. I was, like most boys, a footballer.
Okay.
I played sport. I was at QPR when I was young.
Oh, is it?
I was excellence. Like I did all this football stuff, and I'm now the guy that I used to laugh at. So you know, like when people tell you that they used to play football, you're like, oh, whatever, mate. Like that's me now because people know me for other things, right? But, yeah. But when I was young, my whole life, I've just written my autobiography, and there's a lot of my autobiography which is about football.
Really?
So yeah, but I mean, people don't know these things because where they meet you is where they
land, right? Yeah, where they start with your journey.
Yeah, so basically, I was more into sports when I was younger, but I also had a love for going to like youth clubs and stuff. So the youth club I used to go to would actually allow me to express myself in different sports. I went to Cubs, I went to Scouts. I was very active as a young boy, and very competitive as well. So my lane was never in entertainment. It was always in, I didn't watch like a stand-up comedy show when I was younger and thought, that's what I want to do, you know what I mean? But the consistent thing in my life was humor.
Okay.
You know, from school, from the sports teams that I played.
Like, what do you mean by that? Do you mean like you were, because I've always wanted to ask a comedian this, do you not feel the pressure? Like, have you always been, is it because you've always been the joker of your kind of group and a kind of the one that tells the jokes? Or is that just when you put your kind of comedian hat on and then the rest of you is quite chilled? Or like, what is it to do with your character? Is that why?
I think from the beginning to like now, before I even did stand up, I've never been silly. I was always kind of witty. So for example, I'd get in trouble in school for what I said, not what I did.
Well,
you know? I'd always be slick. I'd always have a sharp response. Like I was very, very quick from a young age. So that was a skill that I didn't know that I'd be using in today's world when I was young. But within football, within any social gathering, I was always the one that I knew I had the ability to make people laugh. Like even bullies that were bigger than me, they would never fight me because I'd always make them laugh because I knew how to control humor from a very, very young age. But I had no idea it was comedy. I had no idea that I was, you know, like a funny person. I just knew that I could use humor or my mind to kind of really control people's responses to me. So for me, it was always sport. And then there was a pivotal moment in my life when I was at a soccer academy, and we spent the whole summer trying to trial to get in, and I got chosen. And then the first game of the season was the same day as Carnival in Notting Hill.
Right.
And as a 16-year-old boy, I decided, you know what, yeah, I'm going to go to Carnival early, and then I'm going to leave early. But there was no way I was leaving early. Yeah, I was into my mates, I was into girls, I was into all of that stuff, right, that wasn't actually going to serve me, but I chose to go to Carnival, and then it just got later and later and later, and I didn't go. And I remember when I got back to the academy, we had this black coach that then, he was quite like Frank. Frank was very like militant, and he took me aside, he goes, I know where you was, I don't even want to wait for you to lie to me, I know where you was, and you showed me that you're not serious, yeah? So literally, from the first thing, he put me down to the second team, and I spent most of the season in the second team, and then I stopped enjoying the football, and then my confidence went really down, and it wasn't becoming fun anymore. But I believe, looking back now, that was the moment when I was starting to realign with my purpose. See, right. With football, I had to work at being good, I had to blend and all that. When it comes to comedy, it was something that was natural to me. There was no effort being made. It was something that I was born to do.
Is that your calling, woman?
So the ruining of my football career, when the ruining of my football career actually gave me the space and the opportunity to go away. I went to America, I worked with young people at Camp America. And on my weekend, I bought a Martin Lawrence DVD that I thought was a movie. Yeah. And then it was a stand-up. It was a stand-up, and I'd never seen stand-up before. And I was just, that was the moment I fell in love with the art of comedy. Like I said, what he's doing, I know I can do. I didn't know what it was called, anything. I just saw him in front of an audience, and then I stopped seeing him after a while. I started seeing myself on the stage, and I was like, with me, and it's always been true to this day, if I see it in my head, I know it's possible. And it's going to happen exactly my story. So when I saw Martin Lawrence doing his stand-up, the show was called You So Crazy, it changed my whole life. It was like a very pivotal moment where that moment gave me way more than football was giving me. Now, even to this day, I speak about it every day because my first love, but the how I fell in love with stand-up was just a whole nother different moment in my life.
Even the way you're describing that Martin Lawrence experience, it just, you could tell the passion and the energy you have for that story over when you were kind of talking about football. You could tell, like...
Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, that moment for me was supposed... Everything was supposed to happen and how it happened, because I'm one of the most disciplined people in comedy right now because I lacked it in football. And I promised myself that I'd never let discipline be the reason why I don't achieve something. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like I had to go through that with football to make sure that it never, ever would happen in comedy. Like, I would outwork anybody when it comes to comedy. Anybody. Yeah. Don't care if it's Kevin or anybody. Like, when it comes to comedy, like, I'm willing to go against the best and outwork anybody. So for me, that was the seed of... the mindset that allowed me to kind of have the comedy career that I've had so far.
And then Britain's Got Talent, tell us about that. Like, how did that all come about? Do you think that kind of elevated it, everything you're doing, or do you think it hindered it? Because, you know, some people coming out now and talk about X Factor and saying how it, you know, saying some kind of unsavory things. But how was it for you? Like, how was that kind of whole experience in terms of Britain's Got Talent?
I think, you know, I'd been through a really, like, strenuous career up until that point. And I feel like when I did Britain's Got Talent, I was probably at my lowest point. Okay. I'd stopped enjoying stand-up. I kind of was in a space in my life where I was hiding from the audience. I didn't really want to engage with the audience. I was just kind of thinking about other things I can do behind the scenes. You know, I didn't want anyone to talk about me. Like, I was very insecure at my lowest, actually. I'd just done a movie that I got robbed from as well. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's, like, a shock, because on screen, you didn't come across like that at all. So that was...
This is the thing. Like, literally, I probably had £20 in my account. I just had my son as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was just like all of the thing just coming over me. But the thing is, when Britain's Got Talent approached me, I said, no, I'm not interested. Why would I do that? All these things that I've done, why would I go on Britain's Got Talent, number one? And then number two, it was the embarrassment. Like, if I go there and I don't get through or something like that, that would finish me. Like, what, you know, that would be in front of the whole world. But then I also realized that I'm a dad now. There's no excuse that I could ever give to my son and say to him, there was an opportunity and I turned it down because I was afraid. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not the kind of father I want to be. And if I ever, and at some point, if my son's ever afraid of something, I want to use that as a reference point to kind of be like, look, I was also afraid when I did this, but look what was on the other side of it. And I'm a firm believer in what you fear the most is right in front of what you want the most. So for me, doing Britain's Talent was an opportunity to kind of, you know, my friend gave me a different perspective on it. He was like, listen, you get to be the new guy with 20 years experience, bro. Like, comedy is something where very few jobs where you get better as you get older. So there's no age bracket on you or anything like that. Like,
nobody's
got talent, no one's heard of you before.
Yeah.
Right, you're going to be on this show where you're going to be the new guy. And I'll be like, who's this guy? But you're going to have 20 years experience behind you. So when this all goes forward, you're going to be able to sustain it.
Yeah.
So literally, that was a calculated risk. I didn't know too much about the show. I didn't know there was a golden buzzer. I didn't know that there was a three rounds and all that. I just knew that this was just another gig to me. I said, I can go down the street and perform in front of 30 people, or I can go on this show and perform in front of the world. Do you know what I mean? Like that. Yeah. That's literally how I saw it. And when I was in a group, everybody's talking about, oh, I really want Simon Cowell's buzzer, and that's the one that you want, blah, blah, blah. And I wouldn't even think about none of that. I was just like, make sure
that's when it happens, right? When you least when you least expect something, that's when it happens, isn't it? It's kind of like when you don't kind of expect it and then it comes. Listen, Kojo, there's so much I do want to ask you. So we need to probably get you back on when you've got your autobiography coming out, because I'm interested now. I think you, it's quite nice to know the struggle behind the creatives, you know, the journey there, because I think all of us feel it. We don't express it until we've kind of made it, right? So there's a lot more. But just to wrap up, can you tell us like what you got coming up here in the UK and in the US? And I know you do lots at the moment and busy man. So give us an update on what you're up to.
When I came back, I was doing the 20 years of Kojo's Comedy Funhouse. Is my comedy club that I did in the UK in central London before congestion charge, when you can go up there. And you know, we had Dave Chappelle come through, Kevin Hart, a lot of the Def Comedy Jam guys. So we celebrated 20 years. I've got a documentary coming to celebrate that event. But a whole bunch of like big names. I've done an interview with Dave Chappelle already. So we've got like a real nice collective of comedians from abroad and the UK that are going to come together and really show what Kojo's Comedy Funhouse did for the comedy scene. You know, the kind of comedians that it spawned, where they've gone on in their career, and how we can kind of do more for black comics in Britain, basically, you know, because I still feel like we haven't really hit our potential of where we can go. So so that's coming. I've got my book coming out as well called All Jokes Aside. I've got a new hour of comedy that I'm going to be taping as well. And then realistically, like I'm, you know, really pushing this acting thing out here in LA. You know what I mean? I've got a really, like, exciting TV show on the way. So, yeah, man, some exciting stuff coming from me, basically. So, yes, just look out for it.
Well, no, definitely will. And that's the best place to be for acting side of things. So, well, maybe not right now, but when it picks up. But, look, thank you so much for coming on. Keep us updated.
No worries.
Definitely want to get you back on. Yeah. But, yeah, thank you for your time.
No worries, guys. Take care. God bless.
So should we get on to our next segment, Tanvi?
Yes.
Which is Agony Aunt and Uncle.
Okay, so this segment, Agony Aunt and Uncles, because we want to keep it both involved.
There you go, you know, like...
This is the part of the programme where we answer your questions and topics that we've covered this week. So in future, you can get in touch by emailing anything to cultureclash@foobarradio.com, or you can tweet at Foobar Radio. And this week we have a couple of questions relating to careers. So if we look at the first one, Nish has emailed to ask, I'm 17 and I come from a strict Indian family. I am going into my final year of sixth form and I'm about to pick my university choices.
Ooh.
I really want to do a degree in sociology. However, my parents want me to do dentistry as they are both dentists and my sister is a banker. I do have the grades for dentistry, but my heart really isn't in it. How should I approach this topic with my parents?
Do you know what? I'm not even going to... I usually play devil's advocate and sit in the fence. I think just go with what you want to do. Like, genuinely, like, 17. Like, at 17, I did not have a clue what I wanted to do. And I just went with English because I was good at that at school.
Yeah.
And I think you're going to go up, you're going to, you know, experience stuff and you're going to really figure out your path. And socially, that's nothing to scoff about or anything like that. It's a really solid degree as well. Just look at the options, maybe present to your parents the career options that you can go into after that. So show them that you're passionate about it, that you've thought about it, maybe even talk to someone that's done it, and then present that to your parents and just kind of make them see, because I get from their point of view, they want, you know, they've got a stable career, their sister's a banker, they're both dentists, amazing, but you know, you want some variety in the family as well.
Oh my God, look, I can relate. Both my parents are in finance and my brother's a dentist.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's kind of like
you
reverse,
get very,
right?
Very...
So I completely get it. What I would say is careers like dentistry, medicine, law, unless you really want to do it and like your heart and the be all and end all is like, I want to fix people's teeth, like you have to be so passionate about it. If you're not...
You have got great teeth, by the way.
Thank you.
You said your brother done them,
yeah,
right?
My brother's a dentist. But my point is careers like that where you're spending 5 to 7 years studying it, if you're not truly passionate about it, your heart's not in it, you're either not going to finish your degree, you're not going to enjoy it, you're not going to do well in it after. So I would say do something that is kind of more broad and can be applied to lots of different jobs. So something like social sciences, sociology, economics, politics, English, history. If you think they're interesting topics, do it. Go and do something that relates to those, because I guarantee you can go and get any single job you want after that, where it's very hard to go the other way, where if you do dentistry at uni, it's then very hard to kind of become a lawyer. It's not impossible, but it's much harder. So if you're not sure about what you want to do, and I think a lot of people at that age don't, which is so normal, then do something that is broad and like you can get lots of different jobs after it.
100%. And like, let's take you back to 17-year-old Tanvi.
Yes.
What did you... What did you want to do?
So I had no idea what I wanted to do at university and jobs. I just knew I ruled out the fact that it was anything science related because I hate blood. I never enjoyed science at school. So I knew like I'm not going to do medicine.
Not even the Bunsen burners.
And honestly, chemistry was my worst subject. Really? I just about scraped through my GCSEs. So no, I knew that I didn't want to do science. So then I kind of looked at the other stuff, which is, you know, finance, law, all of that. And I had no idea, but I really enjoyed economics. I really enjoyed politics. I thought they were interesting at uni. So I thought they were interesting at school, so I did a degree in it. So I did economics and politics. Still had no idea what I wanted to do, even when I applied for jobs. But I just thought, you know, if I don't know what I want to do, I won't know until I try. And I think gaining experience is so important. I really thought I was going to be a lawyer because I'm good at arguing. My dad always used to say, you're so stubborn, you'd make a good lawyer. So I did experience in law and I hated it.
Really?
So again, like, you have to try lots of different things to know if it's something you like or you don't.
Well, getting experience as well, that's such a key. Like,
another
even
thing,
if you can do, I don't know, you probably haven't got time now, but if you've got time to kind of just do a week's worth of experience actually in the job, like, you know, when they used to offer in year 10, they used to offer like that 2 weeks work experience. I was like, I want to be a state agent. I've done it. I was like, no, I don't want to be a state agent.
Right? Like, so it's one of those things, but at least with a degree in like sociology here, for example, it is broad and you can, you know, dip your toes into lots of different careers and take time figuring out what you're good at and what you like.
And I think going with the parents and the kind of traditional Indian careers, like, you just need to like be lawyer and create an argument, because there's so many people, times are changing now. I just need to educate our that older generation on kind of what can come of this. You know, you can make this figure and this is, can happen and this door can open. And you don't want to be the same old as well. You know, we don't want to just have like, you know, we just had Mahir on saying a lot of us Asians are occupying finance roles. And it's just a bit like, OK, where are we in the media roles and the roles that can come from sociology?
Yeah, and also I think a lot of the kind of traditional South Asian careers root back to financial stability or like status in society.
Yes.
And that's changed so much. Financial stability can come from so many different jobs now and so many different industries, not just... In fact, like, have you seen the news with the rise in like the NHS doctors striking because they're not getting paid enough?
Yeah.
So actually we have to put into perspective, like, are the traditional jobs as financially stable as we think or as they used to be? Probably not. So again, like...
And very stressful jobs as well.
Very stressful. And for me, like, I was at a big four firm, right?
Yep.
Such a prestigious place where every graduate wants to be. But the hours I was working versus my salary, if you put that, like, do the math, I was probably working like below minimum wage. So again, I think it's so important to remember that financial stability can come from careers outside of these non-traditional.
Also, them accolades, like you mentioned, you know, we care about status and the kind of, you know, the accolades from other people going, oh, your son's doing this, your daughter's doing this, you know. And I think that still can come in different careers. Like, for example, I'm a filmmaker. I got my film on ITVX the week, and people coming up to me in the temple going, well done. And that's like, you know, no other South Asian in our community has done this. And it's like, you can pave a way and you can make, you know, make your parents proud in other ways. It just might take a little bit longer and it might take longer to understand, but there is roots, right?
Yeah, one thing I will say is it might take longer, like you said, but the minute you make it and the minute you prove everyone wrong, it's going to be the most satisfying moment and you're going to feel happy that you're doing something you're actually passionate about. And at the end of the day, it's your life, so your career decisions should be made by you and what is best for you. No one else is going to be there living that life and doing that job.
Exactly.
So yeah, put yourself first in this situation. Let's move on to our second dilemma for agony aunts and uncles. So Ricky asks, I'm a lawyer in the city and I've been doing that for the past 7 years. When I first started, I absolutely loved it, but I've grown to despise it now and it's affecting my happiness.
Oh.
I really want to change careers, but I'm approaching 30, so I feel like I'm too old. Plus, I know I would have to take a significant salary cut, which worries me as I like my current lifestyle. Any advice?
Listen, do not worry about approaching 30 and doing that. I know I've kind of mentioned, yeah, age does matter, and I can see, you know, I'm evidence of that, you know, it's important to, you know, create a structure in your life and know where you're going, but don't be afraid of changing it because something could happen overnight. Like, you could get into the right career for you and what's meant to be with me, and that path could just open doors. You just don't know. Like,
yeah.
I think take that step? Because still young, people change their careers at any age, you know. Even like, okay, take example, I actually follow Simon Cowell quite a lot, right? And he's kind of left that whole showbiz life behind now. He's moved to the countryside. He's doing mobile app games.
He's like 60 or something.
Never, like, he's changing. He's doing mobile games now. Wow. And he's kind of, you know, rested X Factor. And people change at all times. And okay, that's a different scenario because he's probably got the wealth and he can't afford to do that.
No, but I also think like, this whole concept of 30 years old needs to be put in the bin.
Thank you.
Like, 30 is so young. And also, like, look, life expectancies are much longer. 30 is, like, only a small part of your life compared to, like, 100 years ago where that was half your life.
Yeah.
Right? So, firstly, 30 is not old, so let's just get rid of that. But secondly, I think, like, the stats for entrepreneurs and successful business owners, like, they only kind of knew or found their, like, set up their business, like, post 40 or something ridiculous. So, again, like, you've got time to figure it out. What I would say is don't feel like there's a sunk cost fallacy where, like, if you've done X amount of years in a career, like, you have either loyalty to that career or your firm, or you think, you know, those 7 years that you've done in law are going to go to waste. But they're not, because you probably have learned so much from that career. You probably built yourself and grown so much as a character and as a professional that you can apply that to any industry. So you can have transferable skills as a lawyer and apply that to any world or industry you want to go to. So understand, like, what you've learned as a lawyer and what you're good at and what you enjoy, and then find a career that utilizes those skills, and it can be something completely different. But I also think, like, no salary and no job is worth your happiness and your mental health being compromised.
Yeah.
Like, you can be earning like £1 million a year and you could have a high flying job, but at the end of the day, if you don't have time to spend it and you're going to bed unhappy and not looking forward to waking up in the morning, then what is the point?
And just assess your situation. If you can kind of, like you mentioned, live in parents, or you can kind of rely on someone to support. And loads of people do career gaps now, you know?
Yeah, they just take a sabbatical.
The amazing stuff is you've done 7 years in law, right? You can fall back on that. That's the amazing thing. You've got you've got your accolades, you've got your experience. Go do what you want for a year or two. And then if you need to, you can come back on it, which is amazing, right?
Yeah, and what is the worst that can happen? Like, I feel like in this day and age, we put so much pressure on ourselves to, like, have a job, earn money. And I get, like, cover your costs. Everyone has that. But what is the worst that can happen if you just take a little break to re-pivot, re-evaluate what you want to do? Like, you're not going to be unemployed forever. You've got the experience, like Juggy said. So take the time out you need to figure it out and don't put so much pressure on yourself.
Mickey, I'm intrigued by your story. Can you just update us?
Yeah, we want an update for next week's show. Thanks.
Yeah, what are you doing? What did you decide? Like, we'll talk to your parents. It's fine.
Yeah.
Tanvi, if you could now, if you just had to change careers now, you're influencer, content creator, what would you do?
I think I'm going to be a wedding planner last show. But no, I think things like interior design would be really cool. Wedding planning would be cool. Things I have no experience in this stuff.
Yeah.
But I know that, like, I would find it really fun and interesting. And I'm the kind of person that if I enjoy something, I'll put the hours in and I'll work hard. And I can, honestly, like, I'm so financially driven, I'm not afraid to admit that. I can make money out of anything I wanted to. And I think everyone needs to understand that every industry is lucrative if you're passionate about it and you put in the work to, like, strategize it as a business. So yeah, find something that you love and you find interesting, and you can so easily turn it into a business.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. Careers are meant to change, you know, like we have multiple partners throughout our lives, multiple careers. Like, I don't understand this whole thing, you have to have one, or this whole niche thing as well. You have to kind of go into one area and stay there. I think, you know, I like variety and I like to do a bit of everything. And I think it's the same with you, isn't
it? It's life interesting. Like, don't feel like you have to box yourself into one thing. Like, if you're an accountant, doesn't mean you can't be like a semi-professional sports player on the weekends. Like, you can do a bit of everything.
I mean, that'd be amazing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Like, exactly. A bit of both, like. So no, I think, yeah, you're right. Like, life is so big and there's so much to enjoy of it. So don't ever feel like you have to stick to one thing, or you can't change, or you can't do multiple things at once.
And Ricky, use some of that lawyer money, you know, just hopefully you've been saving, right?
No, and also, I think this is such a big point, actually. Use your employed income to fund your side hustles or your self-employed or your business in the short term, so that when you do take the leap, you're actually, you're chilling, you're winning.
I think even just doing it alongside for a bit.
Yeah, that's
doing
what
like
I did.
Doing it alongside like you did. You balance both. And then when you kind of can strike on your own, go for it. And then you'll kind of figure out what area you want to go into then a little bit.
I think by then you probably establish yourself a little bit. You've got a network, which is really important in any industry. And it's more of a calculated risk than like a blinded risk.
Splendid. Yeah, no, 100%. And obviously, Tammy, you're in, like, kind of moved to media from finance. Tell us the kind of peaks and kind of troughs of that.
Well, I did both alongside one another for 2 years, which I loved. But then obviously there's only so many hours in the day.
Yeah.
But I guess the best thing about being in an employed job was the team, the financial stability, the idea that progression is stable. However, on the flip side, I was working for someone else. I have no flexibility of my day. And so that's what I love about being a content creator, is I can choose how I want to live my life. My mental and physical health comes first. But yeah, financial stability and, you know, the volatility of my income is something that I'm still working through. So pros and cons to both.
And you're going to have challenges, right? No matter what career you're in, and you're going to have, like, you know, stuff that you have to overcome and deal with. Otherwise, it would just get complacent.
And I think failure is such an important part of being successful. Like, 100%. I've made so many mistakes. I failed so many times. Same. But the things I've learned from, like, the failures I've had, I've taken with me and made sure, like, I've applied it to future projects and business ideas. So it is one big, massive learning curve. And, like, that's fine.
Journey. It's all a journey. There you go. Well, look, we want to thank all our guests for appearing on the show. Thank you to Tamvi, of course.
Yeah, thanks, Chuggy. This one was a good one, an important one.
Yeah, it was. It really was, especially with everything coming up with results and everything like that. So,
yeah, A-level results, GCSE results.
Yeah, so next week we are going to be talking living abroad. That's something we both thought about, so it's going to be interesting. And we've got some exciting guests for that one. And if you have any questions for our Agony Aunt and Uncle segment, you can email us at cultureclash@foobarradio.com or tweet @FUBAR Radio.
Thanks so much for